good evening, and welcome to Coffin Cast Episode 7. My name is Kristen. Welcome. If this is your first episode, I suggest going to the very first episode, What in Tarnation Is This?, so that way you know what you're in for. This isn't a happy subject. As lighthearted as I've tried to make this podcast, I think it's not a very lighthearted podcast. Bummer. Sorry, I've tried. But either way, that way you know what you're in for, and you can make an educated decision on whether you want to stick around or not. If this isn't your first episode, thanks. I appreciate you listening. I've had over 100 listens. Finally. That's great. And for some reason, I had a huge jump in the listening of my first episode. Maybe it was the fact that I shamelessly promoted myself on a BuzzFeed article. I don't know. Not a BuzzFeed article, but in the comments section. Seemed to work a little bit, so I'm glad. So thanks for the support, because it means a lot. You know, aside from, you know, making this a monetary benefit to me, it also helps me connect with other people, because I'm kind of a lonely person. But it's nice to connect with other people through this, so definitely reach out to me on Twitter at CoffinCast. I love talking to people on there. I love getting to know people. Hit me up there. That would be great. So, one thing I want to address this week is sources. Not horses. For some reason, when I said that, it was like, did I say horses? No, I did not say horses. I said sources. Citing sources in the research you do. I have been not doing that. I'm new at this, and of all the podcasts I've listened to, they typically don't do it, or they don't do it in an obvious way, so I apologize, I need to fix that. There was a BuzzFeed article recently about a fairly popular true crime podcast. I'm not going to name it because A, I don't remember, and B, that's not cool. But they were not citing their sources, and then when people would call them out on it, they would delete their episodes, and it was a big thing, and people in the podcast community were talking about it, and, you know, how do you best do that sourcing? How do you show your sources? So, currently, just got a eyelash in my mouth for some reason. Currently, what I'm doing is I'm working on a website. Now, I'm not a website builder. I know there's a technical name for that, and I clearly am not it because I don't remember it, but I'm working on it. It's coming along slowly but surely. In addition to putting my sources on that website, I'm going to have a place where you can listen to the podcast without having to be on Spotify if you can't, or whatever your podcast listening pleasure is. You can still hear the podcast, excuse me, there at any of those places, but this way it'll be in a nice, neat location for people that don't have any of those methods of listening to podcasts. I'll probably put an About Me section, because I don't really talk about my personal life all that much. I'm kind of private in that way. It'll have all my social media links. I'm trying to think of some fun things to do. It'll definitely have a Contact Me section, so that way you can reach out with story ideas if you are so inclined. I'd appreciate it. Always love feedback. I appreciate feedback as well. Just don't be mean, because I'm a sensitive person. I'm a delicate flower. What can I say? So let's go ahead and get into this week's episode. Said this before, I'll say it again, probably with another episode. This one is a doozy. This one, though, it's basically my top three nightmares all rolled into one. What happened to the subject of our episode today? I heard about it the first time probably about a year ago on My Favorite Murder. Haven't listened to it since because I can't find it. I was looking for it, but it stuck with me. Ever since I heard it, it was just like, holy cow. I got this weird kind of empathy with the victim, and I could feel almost like terror that she was feeling, if she was in fact feeling terror, I don't know, because, you know, this is unsolved. It's an unsolved case, but there's so much leading up to everything. It's just, it's a sad story, and it didn't need to happen. It's a lot like the Loretta Picard story, where what happened didn't need to happen, but so many balls were dropped that there was no chance for a good outcome. So, with all of that, I'd like to introduce you to Mytrese Richardson. So, before I get into everything, I want to give a little disclaimer. I'm dealing with some severe allergies right now. My nose is plugged. So I noticed when I was reviewing my opener just a little bit ago that I sounded like I was out of breath a lot, and that's probably because I can't breathe out of my nose. So I am a mouth breather today. Yay. But also, I want to put out there, every time I do one of these episodes, I like to give some background on the person that the episode is focused on, rather than, you know, just get into the nitty-gritty, because I these are people. Like I said, I've said this before, I don't want to make this a salacious thing. I want to be respectful. I don't want it to be forgotten that these are actual human beings. These aren't just people on a TV show. These aren't characters. These are actual people. So who was Mytrese Richardson? She was born on April 30th, 1985. Her parents are Latisse Sutton and Michael Richardson. She was a very intelligent, beautiful black woman. Recently came out as a lesbian to her family. Her family supported her. She was dating a woman named Tessa Moon at the time of all of this. She also was a model, a beauty queen, a go-go dancer at a lesbian bar. Just a go-go dancer, not a stripper. Want to put that out there. She also, and this is impressive, she had a Bachelor's of Arts in Psychology from CSU Fullerton. Again, at the time that everything all transpired, she was working on applying to graduate schools for her doctorate in child psychology. She had a lot going for her. In that way, she's a lot like Ceiling Man from our original episode. It's young woman cut down in the prime of her life, basically. One thing that is very important to note before we get into everything is Mytrese also had bipolar disorder. So, bipolar disorder, you know, sounds like depression, whatever, but bipolar disorder is also characterized by moments of mania. And what mania is, it's like a racing of thoughts that may not make sense to other people, but they make sense to you. It's almost like you've got so much energy and so much going on in your mind that you have, like, you have to share it with other people, and you get excited. You're actually happy in a manic state most of the time. So, days prior to what happened, because I don't want to get into it before we get into it, she was leaving strange text messages with her friends and family, incoherent ones. She also showed up at her aunt's house when she wasn't home and left a bunch of her dancing business cards kind of thrown across the yard and on the porch and things like that. She also, on her uncle's car in the windshield, left a note that said, in quotes, "black women scorned," and had a lipstick mark upon the paper. So that is who she was. She was living with her grandmother at the time. Her great-grandmother, I'm sorry, not her grandmother, her great-grandmother at the time. She would be taking care of her in between classes and work. And they always had dinner on Wednesday nights. She was very close with her great-grandmother, and this particular Wednesday night, she decided that she was going to do something a little different, and this is what brings us to September 16th, 2009. On the night of September 16th, 2009, Matrice, who usually had dinner with her grandmother Wednesday nights, told her that she couldn't this particular night because the ocean was calling her. She had to get to the ocean. So she hopped in her car and drove 40 miles away from Watts, where she was living at the time with her great-grandmother, and headed to Malibu. You'd think, oh, well, L.A., Watts is close to Malibu. It's pretty far. It's like 40 minutes away. So she is driving, and decides to pull into this fancy beachside restaurant called Joffrey's, spelled like Jeffrey with a G, but it's pronounced Joffrey like the Game of Thrones stupid king guy. So she pulls in, a valet parking attendant tells her, hey, it's valet parking only, is that okay with you? She said, that's fine. And he had to go park a different car, so he went and parked it. When he returned, he found that she wasn't in her car, but she was actually in his car, rifling through his CDs. He goes, what exactly are you doing? And she just smiled and casually said, I'm here to avenge the death of Michael Jackson. So clearly, there's some kind of something going on, and he's like, okay, and he ushers her into the restaurant to get away from his car, and then he parks her car, and she heads on in. So Matrice takes a table for one by herself. She's seated next to a large table of people having a good time, and she kind of integrates herself in with them and tells them, you know, about astrology and all this stuff, and they are loving it at first, but then it's starting to get a little weird because she's saying things like Mother Nature is her real mother and talking about the death of Michael Jackson and all this stuff, and they're starting to get a little uncomfortable, but they, you know, still entertain her and they talk to her and converse with her. So they leave, and at this point, Matrice has ordered a steak and a cocktail, and Joffrey's is an expensive restaurant. Like, I looked at the menu, I went online to see if it was still there, because, you know, restaurants come and go. It is fancy and it's expensive. It would be like half a paycheck for anything there for more than, I guess, two people to eat. I don't know. But it's expensive. It's legitimately expensive. And Matrice goes to leave without paying the bill, and she's stopped by the manager. He goes, you forgot to pay. And she's like, oh, no, the table that just left before me, they paid for my meal. And he's like, no, they didn't. And she's like, oops, you caught me. So she wasn't belligerent. She wasn't rude. She was still kind of a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for? She was still not totally coherent in some of the things she was saying, but she wasn't violent. She wasn't fighting anyone, and she didn't try to run. She's like, you caught me. I might have left my wallet in the car, but let me call my great-grandmother and see if we can use her credit card. So Matrice calls her grandmother. Grandmother talks to the manager of the restaurant, who says, you know, she got an $89 bill. We just want to make it right. And she offers her credit card over the phone. They said, okay, that's great, but you have to either drive here and sign it, or you have to fax in your signature. She didn't have a fax machine, because who does in 2009? Also, she couldn't drive down there. She was an older woman. 40 miles in the middle of the night is going to be very difficult for her to do. So she calls Matrice's mother and tries to figure out, you know, how they're going to do this. But in the meantime, the manager of the restaurant calls the police, because A, she's acting erratically. B, she's not paid the bill, and she hasn't come up with a way to pay it yet. So the police come. They talk to her outside. They take her outside and talk to her. She explains, you know, I think I left my wallet in my car. Can we look for it? And they say, yeah, they help her look, but while they're helping her look, they find a small amount of marijuana in her car. So the amount they found typically would be like a ticketing offense in California. They decided because she was acting erratically, she wasn't totally coherent, they needed to do a field sobriety test, which she passed, she wasn't drunk, and they decided to get her on a marijuana charge, as well as a citizen's arrest. Now, this is going to sound really weird. It's a citizen's arrest for defrauding an innkeeper. Why it's a citizen's arrest, not sure, and it's not an innkeeper, so who knows what exactly that means. I'm sure it's some old throwaway name for a law or something. So she's arrested. Her car is towed from the parking lot to a tow yard in Malibu that's close to the restaurant, but she is taken to the Lost Hills police station, which is 15 miles away from the restaurant and 15 miles away from where her car is. So she's taken up into the Malibu Hills, into a wooded area kind of location. I guess it was the closest police station, I don't know. But she was taken up there, and her mother starts calling. She calls the restaurant first to try to figure out what's going on. The manager talks to her and tells her about how she was acting and how he was concerned that there was something wrong because she seemed like she was on drugs. And Maitrice wasn't one, you know, of course she had some marijuana in her car, but marijuana is not going to make you crazy. So he told her about that, and he told her that she was arrested and she was on her way to the police station. So she called the Lost Hills police station, and so kind of where, this is where things get a little hairy. So she's not quite at the police station yet. But Latisse is her mother. She calls the police station concerned, but not, you know, overly worried. She's asking, you know, she's nowhere near her car. She's in an area she doesn't know. Is she going to be put on, you know, what's her bail tonight and I'll come get her? Can you keep her until morning so that way I can come get her in the morning? Because I have a 10-year-old. Her 10-year-old was already asleep. It was 40 miles away in the middle of the night. It's not an easy thing to deal with. So she calls the police station, like I've said, like 5 times now. And she says, you know, I'd hate to wake up. This is a quote, a direct quote from the call. I'd hate to wake up to a headline, girl lost somewhere with her head chopped off. And then her mother laughed because she didn't expect, you know, anything bad to happen to her because she's under arrest. She's going to be safe in a police station until she can come get her. The police operator assured her, you know, she'll be safe here. She's not here quite yet, but I will have her call you as soon as she gets in so that way we can arrange for her to be picked up later tomorrow morning. But she's not going anywhere tonight. Don't worry, we're not going to release her. That call ended up never coming. So even though that call didn't come, Latisse is still not totally worried at this point. She figures, okay, she's going through something. She's either too embarrassed to call me, or she wants to sleep off whatever's going on and she'll call in the morning. So 5:30 rolls around, Latisse wakes up and decides she better just call to be on the safe side. So she calls the substation and finds out that Maitrice was released on her own recognizance at 12:30 a.m., middle of the night, in this area she doesn't know. She's clearly having some kind of psychological break, and she's just pushed out the door. The official sheriff's statement said that she was allowed to stay in the lobby or she could have a cell. They offered her to stay there for the night because she couldn't get to her car, but she refused every offer. That's what the sheriff's office is saying. So, excuse me, her mom starts to call around because she's a little bit worried at this point, but she figures, okay, maybe somebody else picked her up. Maybe a friend, maybe her girlfriend, maybe somebody else picked her up. So she calls all her friends and everyone and family, and no one has heard from her all night, except for her great-grandmother, who said she called her a couple times while she was in custody, but that was it. So now her mother is starting to get worried and, you know, alarm bells are going off. So she calls the police station again and asks to file a missing persons report. They tell her she was only released 6 hours ago. Wait 24 hours. She'll probably turn up. She begs them at this point just to help her, just to put out something, have somebody look for her. She knows something's going on and doesn't understand why she wasn't put on a psychological hold or something, you know, to keep her from harming herself or somebody else. Typically, that's when somebody's having some kind of, again, I don't have a lot of terminology for it, but like a psychological break. They'll put somebody in an involuntary hold at like a hospital for 72 hours just to evaluate them before they let them go. That's typically what happens in California. That did not happen in Mitrice's case. So now we're at 6:30 in the morning, an hour after her mom starts calling around. The police get a call from Montanita, which is about 6 to 8 miles away from where they are, from a man who calls the substation saying that there's an unfamiliar black woman in his backyard. He went to go see if she's okay. He called out to her and she said, "I'm just resting." He went to move to another window to get a better look and she was gone. So police show up at that point. Now Montanito, I need to preface this as well. Montanito, like the Lost Hills Police Station, is in the wilderness still. It's very mountainous. You're still in the wilderness. So she walked 6 to 8 miles, supposedly. If this is her, she walked 6 to 8 miles in 6 hours, and she was probably exhausted. So the police show up, and they couldn't find her. But her mother is not alerted. Nobody calls the mother and says, "Hey, we think we spotted her. This is the area she's in. We're looking for her. If you want to come out and look too," you know, nobody does that. Nobody tells her anything. So 12 hours later, Latisse actually drives to the police station to file a missing persons report and get some information. And she was finally told, just in passing by a deputy that was talking about it, about the sighting in Montanito. She gets in the car and drives around trying to find her daughter. And at this point, the sun's starting to go down. It's getting dark. One thing that her mother notices is that it is so dark outside that she can hardly see her hand in front of her face. She knows how afraid her daughter is of the dark, and this is kind of what drives her a little bit. She's like, there's no way that my daughter would have walked 6 to 8 miles in the dark by herself in the wild like this. Somebody had to have driven her there. She starts to get worried that somebody has harmed her daughter. So we're into this 48 hours now. There hasn't been any additional sightings, no information. Mitrice hasn't called anybody, hasn't shown up anywhere. So the Los Angeles Police Department decides to get involved, as she was living in Watts at the time, which is in their jurisdiction. So they start searching the yard of where she was possibly spotted, using dogs to try to get her scent. The dogs do confirm that Mitrice was the unidentified black woman in that man's yard. So from there, they follow the scent to a house that's nearby, but the scent disappears. Luckily, rescue and search teams were able to find footprints that matched the shoes that she would have been wearing at the time. Due to the spacing of the footprints, it looks as if first she's walking and then she breaks out into a run suddenly. But because it's been about 48 hours and that trail isn't totally unused, there's hoof prints from horses, from people riding horseback in those trails. There's other footprints from hikers. Her footprints disappear. So 4 days later, homicide detectives decide to investigate her car just to see if there's any trace evidence, anything saying who she might have gone with. Anything. They're just grasping at straws at this point. So they find her journals and notice, you know, it's kind of in line with the psychological issues that she's going through. And they're incoherent, saying weird things. But more importantly, as they search a little bit further, they find her wallet and her cell phone. The police, the night that she was arrested, were helping her look for her wallet and cell phone in her car. However, they stopped when they found that tiny little bit of marijuana. So had they searched a little bit further, her mother at the time said that she had over $2,000 in her account and would have been able to cover that bill. Had they found the wallet, she would have been able to cover the bill and be on her way. Had they found her cell phone, she could have taken her cell phone with her. The police decided the marijuana was more important than anything else, and they arrested her, and this is where we're at. So naturally, her mother is furious. Her family is furious because this could have all been avoided. Her mother later said in a press release, quote, "It's dark. No matter her state of mind, she's afraid. And that's probably why I don't sleep, because I know she's scared and I feel her fear." They demand some kind of surveillance from the Lost Hills Police Department and are denied. Her mother was told that the cameras do not record and they only monitor, so there's nothing that she would be able to see anyway. Kind of strange for a police station, but, you know, I'm not in law enforcement, I don't know. So because she's kind of hitting a dead end at this point, it's been several days since Mitrice went missing, and it's getting critical. She reaches out to a civil rights lawyer to put some pressure on the police department and also get some more press coverage, because maybe somebody out there knows something about what happened to Mitrice. The lawyer accuses the police department of essentially shoving Mitrice out the door because she was a black woman in a rich white neighborhood. Any white woman would have been escorted to her car, allowed to stay the night, would have had their mother called, any of that. But Mitrice did not get the benefit of that. The police response was that they did nothing wrong procedurally or morally. But later, Mitrice's mother and aunt are at the police station for a meeting. After pressing from her aunt, she's like, "Do you have surveillance of this, of this, of this? Do you have surveillance of when she was in custody?" The police department says, "Oh, wait, yes, we do have a video of when she was in custody." So finally they admit it, but then she's like, "Well, why didn't you tell us this before?" "Well, you didn't ask about when she was in custody." So stupid. Anyway, when they're told that they can view the surveillance, it's going to take some time, so they don't get to view it right away. So from September, when Mitrice went missing, to February 2010, there is nothing. There are no sightings, no movement from police, nothing. So at this point, it's really not looking good. In February of 2010, a kind of strange little bit of a twist happens. Her father is in Las Vegas, and he's sitting in his car, and he believes he sees Mitrice on the strip prostituting herself. He called out to her and followed, but he ended up losing her in a crowd. Mitrice's mother, however, does not believe this is her daughter. She has a feeling deep within her that her daughter is no longer living. She says in the video that I watched that she can tell that her light is out. She's no longer on this earth. She just feels it in her bones. So another month goes by, March 29th, 2010. Her family finally gets the surveillance tapes. In the tapes, they show her pacing in her cell, clearly agitated, not herself. As she's released, a male deputy leaves at the same time. So her mother's thinking he had to see her leaving, and he wonders if she even maybe asked him for a ride, or if he offered her a ride or anything. He had to have seen her. There's no way he could have not seen her. According to the police, though, the deputy was only there to drop off an arrestee with his partner before they left. they don't give her any additional information. At this time, her family draws up a legal complaint against the sheriff's department. Once again, she is supposedly spotted in Las Vegas, this time by a former high school friend who thinks he sees her in a casino. So he calls out to her, and as he does, she takes off running. This woman takes off running. The Los Angeles Police Department come and do a press conference in Las Vegas asking anyone if they have seen her. There are also 6 or 7 sightings at this point by separate people, but her mother still believes deep down that she is gone. So we are at August 9th, 2010. Rangers are in a remote part of the Malibu Canyon called Dark Canyon. It's a very shady place. It's not a place a lot of people go to or want to go to. There is a ranch nearby that is known for producing pornography. There is a weird mural of naked black women in compromising positions. Pretty racist mural. You can Google it if you want to see it. I'm not going to have links to it because it's just gross. So, just to illustrate it further, these rangers are in the area because they're looking for an illegal marijuana farm that was there previously and destroyed by police, just to make sure that there's no new activity. As they're making their way down the creek bed, they are kind of trying to maneuver through the brush and everything, and one of the rangers actually sees what he believes to be a skull. And upon closer inspection, it's definitely a skull. So he contacts the sheriff's department, who comes out. And upon removing, you know, the brush and whatnot from the remains, they find they are partially mummified, nude, and of a black female. Also, there's some clothes nearby. So the coroner's office tells them, do not move the body. Do not do anything with it. Let us come out there and review the scene. We want to get all the evidence we can. For some reason, the sheriff's department bag up the body anyway and send it to the coroner's office. Their reasoning behind that was they didn't want wildlife to disturb the body further. It's been there for a while. If it's partially mummified and decomposed, it's not going anywhere overnight. Either way, the coroner does confirm that it is the body of Maitrice Richardson. Also, the police find that her death was not caused by homicide. There's no trauma to the body that they were able to see. That's all. Now, just to kind of also put this out there, police had received reports that there had been screams in the area several nights after Maitrice went missing. So, were they her screams? Who knows? But it's something to definitely... this whole thing just... It's screwed up. Very clearly something happened to her. But her cause of death is considered, and still is considered, undetermined. Her clothing was not sent to a crime lab. There was hardly any look into anything that might have happened to her. She was decomposed, of course, so it was, any trauma might have been masked by that fact. But her family, because of course they're going to be upset and want answers, they hire a private forensic anthropologist. Her name was Carla Koff. They hire her to examine the remains, examine the scene. They even hike with her to the scene where Maitrice was found. They don't find anything different, but the pressure of Carla saying, you know, hey, you guys didn't send any of this stuff to the crime lab. Why didn't you have it examined for trace evidence of who she might have been with? They decide to exhume her body once again. And again, they determine there was no foul play. Nothing nothing to prove that she was murdered. So the family files several lawsuits against the Lost Hills Police Department. And they did get a settlement. The Lost Hills Police Department has also said that they will review their policies. And that's where we're at with Mitrice Richardson. So like I said in the opener, this whole story is a lot of my nightmares rolled into one. You know, being lost in a place you don't know, in the dark, no cell, no wallet, no car, is terrifying. And not only that, this place is heavily wooded, and it has a few homes scattered about, of course, but it's a wooded area. You're at the mercy of Mother Nature. That's scary enough. Another part of it is she was in the middle of a possible medical mental emergency. She needed to be protected by police, not only from the wilderness, but from herself. And we depend on people like police officers to protect us when we cannot protect ourselves. They failed her, regardless of what any of the official reports say. They failed Mitrice Richardson. Now, this is what's gonna get me. I'm gonna try not to cry. I feel for Latisse, Mitrice's mother. I have a son who I love more than anything, and I can't imagine anything happening to him, let alone not knowing what happened to him. And she had to live with that for almost a year. The not knowing is what would give me nightmares. Not knowing if he was scared, if he called out to me, if he needed me, and I couldn't be there. As her mother said, sorry, I'm crying. As her mother said, she could feel her fear. And how do you live with that? How do you survive after that? Even the thought of it, like I said, I'm crying right now. Even the thought of what she went through, I can't fathom surviving that. Anyway, let's get off that for now. Not to jump on the Reddit conspiracy train, but choo-choo, here we go. There was a post by a user called Nancy Raygun, and it says, quote, sorry, I'm still crying. Elaine Park left her boyfriend's house, which is 4 miles away from where Mitrice Richardson's body was found in August of 2010, and where Tristan Baudet was shot and killed in June of 2018, and where a series of shootings have been reported in 2017 and 2018. Who is the Malibu Canyon killer? There were two other people who mentioned other people who went missing and were killed in that area. So is somebody actually murdering some people in Malibu Canyon? Is there a serial killer that we don't know about? That's another episode, so we're gonna stop there. So follow me on Twitter. I'm getting more followers. I would like some more. I would love to interact with you. Love to hear your thoughts. Love some constructive feedback. Hit me up on Twitter at CoffinCast with a capital C, one word. Again, that's at CoffinCast with a capital C. Also, I'm on Instagram and I have no idea how to use it, but you can find me there at CoffinCastPod. No capitalization needed. Again, my website isn't quite done yet. I am working on it very slowly because I hate doing it, but hopefully by next episode it'll be up. I'll have my sources in the description so you can easily find those as well. So until next week, life is a dream walking, but death is going home.